Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. This season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix, May 16th. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.
Welcome to Katie's Crib, a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio.
What it's done to me is like really put my own self-care on the back burner because she's so important. And I have found that my husband doesn't do that. He's always following his passions and going surfing and playing the new video game and staying up late and having fun and doing his thing. Whereas I feel like it's almost like I'm at war and I'm just trying to do like this triage of like, how can I just be keeping her safe and healthy? And she even said to me today, she's like, Mom, don't you need to buy yourself some socks? And then she goes, and don't you need some underwear too? And I was like, how do you know I need underwear? She's like, I saw your drawer. There's not that many.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Katie's Crib. I am so happy to be sitting here right now because I'm just getting through one of those lovely 24-hour neurovirus stomach bugs that your children bring home to you. You're welcome for that information. It's been a good day, though, because I think I'm through it, folks. I think I'm through it. And I'm so glad to be because today's guest, I just finished reading her book. I'm a huge fan. She is hilarious. I mean, I think I'm a funny mom, but she's like a super, 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 super funny mom. She's a stand-up comedian, and she just has an incredible mom story. She is a mother of one beautiful daughter who is 4. I think she's about to turn 5. And she had her daughter much later than a lot of people. And I love her journey of how she decided to be a mom, because let me tell you, folks, she was not convinced that this was something she always wanted to do. And now that she has her daughter, I think motherhood has very much changed her in all sorts of ways, good and bad. And we can hear all about it in her amazing book called The World Deserves My Children. Yes, they do, Natasha Leggero. Yes, they do. She's going to be our guest today. The book is a laugh out loud riot. I mean, come on. There's nothing better than a stand-up comedian becoming a mom because they have the brains and the wit to put everything that you think is hilarious and insane about motherhood actually into jokes. The book is brilliant. And if you don't know about Natasha, let me tell you about her. She's an accomplished actress, writer, stand-up comedian, which I already mentioned, and she's garnered attention in film and TV and the web. She most recently hosted the TBS food competition show Rat in the Kitchen. She also created, wrote, produced, and starred in the Comedy Central sitcom Another Period, a period piece and spoof on modern-day reality shows, and it ran for 3 seasons. Her Netflix special, The Honeymoon Stand-Up Special, aired in 2018. Her first and only book, ha ha ha, The World Deserves My Children, is a laugh-out-loud funny collection of insightful and razor-sharp essays on motherhood in our post-apocalyptic world. And it's out now wherever books are sold. And finally, Natasha hosts the Endless Honeymoon podcast. She hosts the Honeymoon podcast with her husband, Moishik, and currently resides in Los Angeles with their 4-year-old daughter. I am very excited to welcome today's guest, Natasha Leggero. I honestly just finished your book last night, The World Deserves My Children. And I agree. We deserve your daughter. We deserve her.
I know. My friend's like, shouldn't it be called My Child since you only have one? But I could accumulate another kid at some point. I don't know.
Absolutely. You don't know what the future holds. You have no clue. I mean, although I do love the checklist, there's a chapter in her book, all of you listeners, where there's a really simple checklist that you can answer yes or no to. And if you have a multitude of yeses, you are a perfect candidate for someone who should only have one child.
I start that chapter with a quote, which is, one is an accessory, two is a lifestyle. And I was just much more down for the accessory. But as you read, like, I was at the dentist, and right after I had the baby, and my dentist was like, one child is not a family. You need to go have another baby right now. And I was like, I don't want another. Like, I like having a small, close family.
Yes. I used to date this dude in high school who was an only child. And he was incredible. And his relationship with his parents was incredible. For real. And then the other person I will say is Kerry Washington is an only child. And she's literally one of the most remarkable human beings I've ever had the pleasure of knowing. She has an amazing relationship with her parents.
Didn't she go to Spence? I'm obsessed with everyone who went to like private New York school.
She went to Spence. So good luck. Move to New York and go and send your daughter to Spence. But wait, while we're on the subject of New York, you and I have 1,000 things in common.
Okay.
We both went to the Stella Adler Studio of Acting.
Really? Did you learn from Alice Winston? I might be older than you.
Yes, but not by much. I just turned 40. No, I had Ron Burris.
Oh, yeah.
Joanne Edelman, Tom Oppenheim.
Joanne did the Alexander technique.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And I was dying laughing because, like, who else could this this storyline be for in your book when you put the cork in your mouth and you're doing... like two households, both alike in dignity in Fair Verona, where we lay our scene, which to this day, I could be dying of Alzheimer's and I would still remember that fucking monologue.
I used to do a joke that Stella Adler Conservatory taught me how to be a working actor in the 1700s. Because it was just like, you had to put a cork in your mouth, you were like constantly reciting Shakespeare, and then you take the
cork. You had to wear rehearsal skirts that were like ridiculous.
You
like,
learned fencing.
You're not prepared for auditioning at all.
No, we should have, they should have like a podcast thing.
Yes, yes. So that's one. Two, we've both been, I was a waitress in New York for a gazillion years. And so were you. We both first got cut out of our first huge TV film gigs, which I think really helps in paving the way to understanding this business. Mm-hmm. In your book, can you remind us what, I think you were a kid.
I was a child actor and I was in this movie, Personal Foul. And it was David Morris and Alan Arkin. And I have an actual part. But it was like in a little scene and in between scenes. And so no one ever told me. I was invited to the premiere. I brought my whole Italian family. We took up two rows. And then I just remember like waiting for myself. I was like planning on standing up when I got on camera.
Oh my God, Natasha.
And then when the credits started rolling, tears just started rolling down my face. And I was like, what? I just didn't understand.
And why would they have invited you? Like, oh my God. Mine was, I had one line on Rescue Me, the pilot. Remember that? It was like a firefighter show starring God. I don't fucking remember his
name. Dennis Leary.
It was a big New York. Yes. Thank you. Dennis Leary. And I had a scene and I told everyone, most importantly in my town growing up, it was like my first job out of college. I was like 21. And I told everyone, most importantly, my ex-boyfriend who had fucking wrecked me, my high school, like love of my life, who I'd lost my virginity to. And when I watched it and I knew everyone in the tri-state area was watching it at the same time, including my grandmother, who was very judgmental, and I wasn't in it, I was like so fucking embarrassed. It was unbelievable. Like just total embarrassment. Okay. This is a mom podcast and you are, for everyone listening, I know we're all in this shit right now and it's ups and it's down and it's amazing, but you are such a gift because none of us are stand-up comedians and none of us are funny. Like, it was amazing reading your book. I can't think the way you think. Do you feel like your daughter is going to be absolutely hilarious having you and your husband as funny people?
Actually, I'm very hesitant to do stand-up about her because she'll say something funny and I'll tell my husband and she's like, Mom, do not tell people things I say. That's her new thing.
Fuck.
So now I'm like, okay, at least I can tour on this material and she'll never find out, but I can't really record a special.
Is that the boundary you're drawing right now?
Yeah.
I do not want to record this to live on forever in case she can watch it in 10 years.
And like That's I was scary. Telling my opener, I just did a book tour and one of the women opening for me had like a 13-year-old. I told her this and she's like, yeah, my daughter doesn't want me talking about her either. It's been pretty hard for the past 10 years. like God. The kid is in high school and they don't talk because of it. So,
oh my God.
It's a hard thing. And I was trying to be really conscious about her in the book. And I did a reading pass of it through her eyes.
Yeah.
Because I do jokes about hoping they take a nap so dangerously long, you think maybe something happened to them. Or there's like obviously right, some dark things that are jokes. And then I added a little, when my husband read the book, he was like, "Do you even like me?" I had to like add a little paragraph for him.
It is so clear in the book that you love him and that you have an incredible relationship, which I want to talk to you about so much about how it's changed since becoming parents, because you were together for a long time before you decided to jump into this. And what I love so much about the book is you weren't going to have a child. You were so career centric.
A situational breeder is what they call it.
You met the guy. It was the right time in the right situation. And also kind of a miracle situation. Take the listeners through how many eggs we had left and the miracle that is your daughter.
Aw. I just on a whim, as a 38th birthday present to myself, I froze my eggs and had them sitting there. And then I had met Moshe pretty quickly after that. And he really expressed that he wanted kids. But after we got married at 40, the doctor just kept saying, you know, those should be your insurance. So you should keep trying to do it on your own. So I spent like thousands and thousands of dollars trying to do it in these last moments of my fertility.
What was the clock saying to you? Like, if we don't conceive without using the stored eggs, what was your timeline on that?
I kind of feel a little bit like I was hustled by the doctors, and I spent a lot of money trying to do this naturally, but not really naturally. Like, they're called IUIs, and you go there, and like Moshe would be at the Funny Bone in Kansas City or wherever the fuck, the Chuckle Hut. And then we'd have, like, during my ovulation, so we would have his sperm on tap, and then I'd go into the doctor that very day.
They turkey based it.
Exactly. I did those for probably a year, and nothing ever worked. I had a very irregular period, so it was just always a challenge. An important thing to remember if you are trying to conceive is like, talk to your friends who've done it successfully. A lot of this stuff is like brand new technology. And
yes,
your doctors are busy and they don't have all the data yet. I talked to a friend and she was like, I think you should just use the ones you have. That's what I did. And so I did that and they had to defrost them. He had to blast his load on them. Or I don't know what the medical term is.
Mix them up, blast some sperm on top of that shit.
I had eight.
Eight.
And then once he did his load, I think four survived. Then they tested him for genetics.
Yeah.
And two survived. And just a really quick thing, if people, because I know this is a mom podcast, a lot of people are like, you ask the doctor, should I test for the genetically? And they're like, it's up to you. And you're like, I don't fucking know. But here's the reason. Here's the reason why I would say maybe you shouldn't is because you can kill a lot of the embryos that way. And a doctor would never tell you this. But if you're okay with having an abortion, it might be better to put it in there so it's so you get that chance.
Natasha, we've done 1,000 episodes of this shit. That is such a good point. Like, if you are someone that by 12, 13 weeks, you know from the tests that something is genetically irregular and unsafe or not something that you're looking to get into and you would have an abortion anyway, then maybe it is better to weigh your risk reward, not do the genetic testing, because those genetic tests, sticking a little needle in the made embryo in the petri dish kills it. Fuck.
A doctor will never tell you this. We're all trying to figure out this technology. So anyway, we did the genetic testing because I really didn't know. One trick I always ask doctors, I'm like, what would you tell me if I was your daughter? I'm like constantly telling that. I think that's a really important thing to make them answer. I had two left. I put one in and I was pregnant and I was like so happy. And then it died in like 2 weeks. And then I was like, I don't know what to do. This is my last chance. I called the doctor. I said, what is the percentage that this will turn into a baby? And she was like, not very high. It was like, I think almost 30%, which is something. And I called my friend who had just been through all this. And I said, what do you think? And she's like, your body was pregnant before. Maybe that's a good sign. Put the other one in. And I was like, yeah, maybe since my body was technically pregnant. So I did that. And it lasted. That's my daughter. But I will say I was so terrified every step of the way. And that's something that they just don't tell you, like that terror, that fear that I had, like every single second, every doctor's like, is the heart still beating? Does she have all 10 fingers and toes? Even now, like I've got like 10 rotating worries that I'm worried about with her. Like,
yeah, I want to talk to you about that. I know from your book, you had said, this was huge, struck me so hugely. It seems to me as a reader that anxiety is something that struck you so hugely during your pregnancy. Obviously so. I mean, this is your one last egg. You wanted this so badly. God forbid something happened. You had already had a miscarriage.
And I already tried to do it every other way.
And you tried to do it every other fucking way. And then it's not, like you said, the anxiety, what you've birthed, I think I quoted it in my notes, was in the, what you're birthing is also eternal fear, I think is how you
That, yeah, I think like for some people, like maybe they've been neurotic and fearful their whole lives, and that's just something they've always dealt with. But for me,
daring as shit. You're on like last minute planes. There's an extra seat to Africa. You're like, I'll go. You like move to Australia with a boyfriend. Like, I would never have done the shit you did. So it is like crazy that anxiety has shown up for you.
And it's a problem with my husband because he's like, why aren't you the person you used to be? Why are you so scared? And part of the reason I'm so scared is because he's so nonchalant. I mean, we're like central casting for like typical dad, typical mom.
Yes.
He's just so easy breezy. She's fine. Send her to school. I'm like, she has a fever.
Is anyone thinking about this? Am I the only person thinking about this? Now, wait, also in your book, though, you had said to him in the chapter, I think, where you interview him, which is one of my favorite chapters in the book, but you said that you thought a lot of the anxiety would go away by the time she turned 5. And correct me if I'm wrong, but at the time of the recording of this podcast, she's turning 5 in a week.
I know. And he's like, okay, this better stop. Now I have this complete like anxiety around summer camp, which it's February and LA. I don't know if people experience this in other cities, but
nope,
like,
they don't. They don't. But here it's a fucking nightmare.
Every summer camp is 4 days long. And you're supposed to put your child in like 12 different 4 day long summer camps that all have wait lists that are full by February. I can't get on wait lists. I can't like set an alarm. I mean, I guess I can, but I just don't.
This is ridiculous. I'm not there yet. My son is 5. I've kept him in nursery school for a long time. And I've heard that if I want to sign him up for these classes after school next year, that I have to be setting an alarm on my laptop and sign up, or it's going to be full and you're not going to get in the Lego class. And then someone's like, if you think that's bad, you're fucked for summer camp in LA, which is an absolute nightmare. It's the same thing. You better set your alarm. Your husband needs to set his alarm. I'm not doing it.
But it's not even a full summer.
It's 4 days. It's not even like it's 4 days. And now you're figuring out the next one to get on the wait list for. And also, what's the new address and who's getting her there? It's absolute horseshit. And here's my question, though.
Yes.
How are you feeling about her turning 5, and how is your anxiety?
We'll say it does morph into something else, but I am like, couples therapy and therapy in general is helping that. And I'm trying to manage worry. Something can be a concern without having to be a catastrophe. And I think that as like new mothers, at least my experience was like, I was always catastrophizing like any little thing. And like every time you log onto Facebook, some toddler's died from rat bite fever or whatever it is. There's just this constant thing. And I have a friend who's a doctor, and she shared with me, which was made me cry, but like a lot of infant deaths in children happen before age 5. 5 is when they can start being a little more safe on their own, because that's 5 full years where you're just like worried of them like falling down steps and choking.
Are you still cutting her grapes up to like 1/8?
I don't. Okay, she's good. A pretty voracious eater, so I don't worry that much. But it's like a brand new thing of me trying to like just be able to be concerned about something without making it like an extreme.
Yeah, making a real, there's a real difference between concern and catastrophe. For me, I am one of those people who I find something to worry about regardless. I'm one of those New Yorker like anxious people, always have been. My son, for some reason, I was okay or masked it. I don't know how I survived, but my daughter was born in COVID and I got pregnant a week before shutdown. And it was, my anxiety was so horrific that it was postpartum depression and anxiety. Oh. And I honestly would save my life, though. And I don't know, but if you've ever had medication, but honestly, Zoloft is the thing that fucking, I don't know what I would have done. And thank God, because being on that side, the chill side, or your husband's side, or my husband's side, because my husband is also similar to Moshe, where he's like, it's going to be fine. You're making everything worse. Stop. So much so that whenever I have to let him Google things, and he just filters it for me and tells me what I need to know.
You know what else really helped me is my husband telling me, he's like, there is no way that our child is not subconsciously feeling your anxiety and fear, and that it's not going to affect her in some way. Hearing that, I'm like, oh, of course, because why wouldn't she sense this?
Yeah. Has she ever said anything to you about it? No, not yet.
No. Oh my God. Yesterday I walk in and Moshe and her are watching Black Panther, and there's just like machine guns. And I was like, no, this is not okay. And I just started yelling. I was so mad. And
yeah, yeah. I would have been pissed.
And she was just like, Mom, it's fine. I really did feel like she could probably handle it, but like machine gun.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would rather wait on that.
But in the end, she's okay. She's okay because she's loved.
Yeah.
And it's going to be okay. I feel so connected to moms who struggle with anxiety and catastrophize bad things happen with their kids, because I really, truly understand that feeling, and it sucks. It's really hard.
And then there's like the images you have, like we were in a pool once, and it was like an indoor pool, and there was like a stairway, and my husband like threw her into the pool. She almost hit the stairway because he hadn't seen the stairway. And it's like, she's fine. And it didn't happen.
Well, but you see the image of a broken neck and her floating at the top of the pool.
And I would have never thought. That's the thing. It's like this. I would have never thought of that until he almost did it, you know? And it's like, I could have done it too. It's not his fault. I'm just saying, it's just they're just so vulnerable. And just what it's done to me is like really put my own self-care on the back burner. Because mm-hmm. she's so important. And I have found yes. that my husband doesn't do that. He's always following his passions and going surfing and playing the new video game and staying up late and having fun and doing his thing. Whereas I feel like it's almost like I'm at war, and I'm just trying to do like this triage of like, how can I just be keeping her safe and healthy? And she even said to me today, she's like, Mom, don't you need to buy yourself some socks? And then she goes, and don't you need some underwear too? And I was like, how do you know I need underwear? She's like, I saw your drawer. There's not that many.
Oh my gosh, hilarious.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame, so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of our favorite Netflix series, Bridgerton. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? And meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. And I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.
I think some of the biggest things that have come about since motherhood for you is you never knew you could love something more than you love yourself, which I think is amazing and I agree with.
Hopefully my agent doesn't listen to this, because if they know that you're not a narcissist in Hollywood, you're done.
Done. And the other thing I think is with this love and quoting Judy Garland in your book and having your heart outside of your own body, this huge piece of your identity now about having this anxiety and caring so much about somebody else's well-being has just never been your story. It was never mine either. We're both actors, so you're a fucking narcissist. We've always been about career and all of that. How has it changed your marriage?
Oh, it's definitely made it worse. I mean, that's what nobody wants to say.
That's why I love you, and everyone needs to read this fucking book, because you're saying what everyone else is feeling.
There's no way it's as good. Maybe like there's a few instances, but it's like it really wears down. Like our kid sleeps with us right now because she's just in this stage where she comes in the middle of the night every night, and it's like, I want that to end, but I'm sure it will. But that's not what's happening right now. Yeah, it's just hard. You're exhausted. There's very little time for romance. The house, for me, like my space being clean is so important. And then I was able to deal with my husband's ADD disaster, chaotic mess, that beginning stages of desire. That's just like a different thing. And now like the energy is like a pandemic later, a child who's leaving the same amount of mess, his mess.
You feel like a mess because I'm the same. I can't, I need everything to be, I love when my house looks beautiful and organized. It's how I present my brain on the outside. But have you been able to let any of that go? Have you been like, of all the battles I'm going to fight today, one is not making sure the house is clean. Like, I just can't take that on, and I'm going to make the choice to do self-care instead or do something for my own career. Does that ever happen?
No.
Fuck!
Well, no.
Natasha! No!
Here's what I'll do. I'll clean a room. I'll be like, okay, I'm going to take a bath. And he's really cool about, I got her. You do your thing. So I'll like clean the bathroom, take a bath. I am not relaxing in chaos. Like, it's just not who I am. And I would like to learn how to do it. One thing I've learned how to do is not lead with that. Mm-hmm. So if we walk into the house and it's like a disaster, I'll try to like talk about it in a few minutes. Here's another thing I've done. This is a practical thing that's really been helping me, is like as soon as my daughter goes to school, I get out a black garbage bag and just start throwing away all the crap. There's just broken toys, board games.
Leftover breakfast. Like,
yeah, two Candylands and they're all missing pieces. And inside of them are Uno cards, but there's only half the deck. Like, I'm just like throwing that shit away. I can't deal with it. Just taking that black garbage bag and just throwing my husband's shit. Like, just like that has really been giving me some solace.
Okay, we like this. Just take a fucking, they go to school, grab your garbage bag and just start throwing shit out. You have, though, you do say a lot in the book about how traditions are a huge part of your family. You converted to Judaism and you love Shabbat, which I do too. We do Shabbat also.
You
in
do.
My house.
Shabbat Shalom, by the way.
Shabbat Shalom, my love. Yes. And you were saying, like, I think it's four C's that you said that I can't remember, but it was like, it ended in cock.
Oh, Cabernet. That. It is a beautiful holiday in the sense that it's from sundowns Friday to sundown Saturday. It's like you're drinking wine, you're having sex, you're not having sex the whole time. You go on a walk, try to put down your devices, you cook.
You light candles and you sort of take a pause, say prayers. Have you been able to keep that up? And does that help with your marriage?
Yes, totally, 100%. Having that. And also another thing, like, I don't want to totally throw my husband under the bus, because obviously...
No, you're not.
It's amazing to have this, like, family and the three of us, like, having this really close family. And it's, I really love so many aspects of it. Something that's really been helping me is, like, identifying what my husband is good at. He's really good at cooking. So I'm like, okay, even though he makes a complete fucking mess where, like, every cabinet is open and every spice has the top off of it, but it's like... He's good at that. So I'm like, okay, can you just be in charge of cooking? Can you cook every night at 6? And he's like, okay.
Great.
And then while I said that, I was like, and by the way, can you just be in charge of the dogs too? And he was like, okay. So just not having to give our dogs their medicine and food and do all the things that was.
That's huge.
So
that's
like
huge.
Giving him those two things to do, so then at least I can clean up after everybody and not also have to feed the dogs.
Make it.
And also make right. the food. Because his standards of cleaning aren't the same as mine. He'll just think we're nailing it and it's just my skin is crawling. So it's just different upbringings, I guess. To bring that back to Shabbat, yes, like him saying the prayers and cooking us dinner and having that little family time. It is really nice.
Do you turn your phones off for 24 hours? We don't.
No, I do. I mean, I'm not like that addicted to my phone at all. I find it like a respite to get rid of my phone and to just turn it off. And if you do want to do that, you really do have to like figure out what time sunset is and send out a mass email response. Like, my phone is not going to be
on. I'm not available.
Anything you're going to do Saturday, you have to plan it ahead of time on Friday. But the few times I do that and then have the Havdalah ceremony at 8 p.m. on Saturday, it's beautiful. It's amazing. A book I read called it Spirituality in Time. So in this 24, just in signing out for these 24 hours, you're having this beautiful experience. I would still watch TV, but just like getting away from the phone, I think is like really important.
Huge. Traditions are a really beautiful way when you're starting a new family. It's like you're figuring out. We had a similar thing where like my mom's Jewish, my dad's Irish Catholic, but my mom really wasn't religious. So I actually grew up celebrating more Catholic holidays because my dad's family was very religious and my mom's family was not. And then I married my husband, who's like a fucking super Jew and loves Judaism.
Mine too.
Loves it. And he did such a beautiful job of introducing me to traditions and holidays that he knew that I would love. And so we have this like nice hodgepodge thing going on that we're sort of inventing as we go. I know in your household, it's different because your husband wouldn't have never had a Christmas tree and you grew up Italian, like Catholic, right?
I'm definitely regretting saying that I was okay without a Christmas tree. This year I had a nature table.
Nice. Some garlands.
Yeah. So we had like garlands and candles. And like when we'd go to the beach, we'd bring back like skulls and shells. And then I got like a cool big pail and put all kinds of flowers and pine stuff. So it did feel like festive to have that. And I did have a Hanukkah bush one year. So I'm slowly trying to introduce that.
Yes.
But when you decide to have a family, sometimes it's modeled for you in your own family. But I grew up as a latchkey kid with a working mom who was divorced and we didn't really have anything like that. And then when you see the weekly Shabbat like that, I do feel like there is just something, it's very family forward. And that's why I was totally fine to convert, because I saw like what it did to the families that we would visit and his relatives. You know, it was just like made you just very family focused. Coming from a divorced family and a dad who was just always off doing his own thing, going to nightclubs, ignoring my mom. It was like nice to see that, oh, the man is like home on Friday and he's helping with the dinner, blessing me, blessing the kid. Yeah. And I thought, oh, Judaism really does show you how to be a family almost through those holidays and through a weekly holiday, because Christianity, it's, yeah, Christmas, Easter, but those are 6 months apart.
It's hard not to feel a little beige when you decide to have a baby. It really starts to feel like you're living the same life as every mother you meet. Do you just feel like I can't believe I'm in this rat race, or has the beigeness sort of worn off?
So I don't feel that as much anymore because I see that I'm failing.
You're not.
No, not failing, but like as I meet more moms, like, you become friends with these moms who are like, this is their full-time job. And I'm just trying to like stand behind them and save our text threads.
Totally. But like, we're not those moms. I do the same. I always think it's really great to line up some moms who are like, the mom is the first and foremost thing, because then they do all the research and then they can just tell you the shit, because I can't. I'm in a very similar boat to you. Going back a minute, your husband and you got into an argument. I wanted to ask you this about the IVF thing. Why never a surrogate? Like, why after putting your body, which I'm sure was so hard through all the IUI and IVF and hormones and miscarriage and all of that?
I was completely terrified to be pregnant. I didn't want to be pregnant. I wanted to be a mom. I did not want to carry the baby. I begged him. We met at a surrogacy office. We actually were matched with a surrogate. We did a Zoom with them. And my husband was just like, you're just going to rent out her womb? And I was like, she's going to get paid. Like, I cannot be pregnant. I don't want this to happen to me. And the straw that kind of broke it all was that the woman's husband worked at a paint factory. Something about the fumes, or I don't know, there was something that just felt like a little off. And sure, he was like, no. And then I kept going to the doctor and I'm like, you know, I'm like 40. Like, don't you think like it's bad for me to carry the baby? And he's like, your womb is a 10 out of 10. He was just like all into my womb and telling me how good it was, or my uterus. And I was just like thinking he wanted to fuck my uterus. He was just like, your uterus is amazing. So then finally I was like, you know what? I'll do it.
Fine. Let's just do it. You did get your way in that you did not have a vaginal birth, which you had no interest in.
I was terrified. And like, my mom had 3 C-sections. I was just like, just had this like vision that I was going to be shopping, because my mom told me she was like out and then her water broke and my dad was at a bar and she had to like find her way to the hospital. It just all sounded awful. And I asked my doctor, I was like, can we please schedule my C-section? I don't want to be grunting and screaming. And he was like, okay, if it doesn't start to drop by this date, and it wasn't dropping. And he was like, okay, how's February 22nd? And I was like, perfect, I'll cancel my eyebrow wax. It was also based on the fact that it was very tight and nothing was opening or dropping.
Right.
So many people I knew had emergency C-sections, including a friend who has a scar that goes from like the bottom of her breast down to her pubic bone sideways, like a slash, because it was an emergency.
No. By the way, I know people who have elective C-sections. We've done podcast episodes about it. I begged mine to have an elective C-section.
Oh, you
and
did?
She was good. Like, yeah, but I didn't have it, because she was like, how soon after do you have to be back at work? I was like, 3 weeks later. She was like, there's no way in hell. He's so low. You're going to get this baby out. Mm. In my opinion, it won't be a big thing. It was a big thing, but in regards to other people's stories, it was actually, and everyone can curse at me all they want, it was relatively like 3 pushes and I was out.
Did you get to scream at your husband during that too? That part seemed cool.
It was so quiet. Like, I didn't make any sounds, because I had this woman, thank God, she was like, don't use your face to push. You put all that energy down into your fucking butthole. Don't waste it on your face. And I was like, okay. You listed a number of things you found in readings of what a parent should or shouldn't say to a kid. Do you curse in front of your child?
You know, I do. And I'm like, and then if she says something, I'm like, okay, we can just say that in our house. Like, those are bad words. You're not supposed to say it outside of the house. And she doesn't really
do that. She knows it's a bad word.
She knows. Yeah. And she'll be like, mom, because then sometimes we'll be playing a game and I'll be like, gosh, darn it. Or I'll say something like that. And she's like, mom, that's a bad word. And I'm like, it's not. It's just, I'll be like, frick. And she's just like, that? No. Okay. So she's, you know.
Do not hire a hot nanny. Best advice ever. I got it from so many very successful actresses in this business when I was having my kids. But does that mean I was ugly? Because I was a nanny for a really fucking long time.
No, and here's the thing, too. It's like, my husband, it would take a lot for my husband to not be attracted to somebody. My version of hot is different than his version of hot. If she has big tits, he's probably not going to stop talking about it. You don't want your husband to be too attracted where it's like distracting. And we had this girl come over And it was almost like just observe your husband in the interview. He was like, had this pep in his step, and he was like talking to her and trying to make her laugh. He was just like all excited.
Pass.
I know. Nope. And it was like something about the way he was acting. It was like distracting and taking up too much of his energy. And I was just like, no, this is not like this. This is not a fit.
I'm so glad we're having this conversation. I have had a full-time nanny, the same one for 5 years. She's 67, and she's all of our nannies, to be completely honest. And we will be transitioning in the fall as my son is going to be starting kindergarten and my daughter is going to be starting nursery school. So we're going to be moving to a part-time nanny. And so the conversations are already brewing where it's like, you know, it would be really fun to have like a 20-something who's going to like pick him up because it's a different kind of job. We pick him up from school. He might go to baseball. You might have to pick her up, but it's like not full-time type of a workload. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we're not doing that.
Also, I'm sorry, but I don't want a 20-year-old driving my child.
Yes, I know. People used to hire me to do that, and I would smoke fucking cigarettes.
What?
And take – not when the kid was in the car. I would smoke, pick her up, spray the car, like air it out. Put her in the back of my car. This is me at like 24 driving around Los Angeles. And I even a couple times took her out on dates with dudes. Her mother's a very good friend of mine, where I would have the guy that I was sort of dating, like, meet me at Travel Town, like where the trains are. Do you want to come and like meet me at the zoo? Like, I used to do that shit. That is not okay.
I know. It is really hard. I want to be there too. I want to be there after school because if I'm just around, she just starts talking about her day. And it's so hard. I'm like, how was your day? And I don't know. Fine. What'd you do? Right. Eat. Like, she won't tell me anything. But then it's like, finally, she does start talking. If you're the one there.
Talk to you.
Yeah.
And if it's the nanny, she's going to talk to her.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of our favorite Netflix series, Bridgerton. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for The Eligible Bachelor? And meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. And I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.
Your daughter's birthday is coming soon. What are the plans for the day?
Oh my God. I feel bad because, first of all, she has 3 different birthday events. And literally, I don't remember one of my birthday parties.
Nope.
From childhood. Not one.
I remember 13 a little bit.
It is a blur. But like, we're just like, I want a mythical themed birthday party. So my husband found like a woman who's a mermaid who does magic and a cotton candy machine. And then we started like Googling people to come over to your house to do a cotton candy machine. And it's like so expensive. Now my husband's buying a cotton candy machine to do it himself. And
Oh my God.
He's just going to be like covered in syrup. This is going to be a nightmare. But still, it's like we're putting so much energy into this. Oh, and then we're taking her to Lake Arrowhead so she can wake up in the snow because she's always wanted to see the snow. This is one of the problems with having an only child because I'm like, we have like time to give her. We're very conscious of it. We want her to have this magical experience because we love her so much. Mm. How can we, you know, how do we make her spoiled, but maybe not a brat?
Yeah. We had this amazing expert on Katie's Crib named Ron Lieber, who wrote a book called How Not to Spoil Your Kid. It's a really great book. Or you can listen to the episode on this podcast, but he goes into people's home and consults people who are like, we only take private planes with our children. There are people who are doing crazy shit and have crazy amount of money that he works with. But also, I understand what you're saying. If I have access to be able to give her these things, and she's the thing I love the most in this world, and I just want to give her everything. But at the same time, I want to teach her the value of money and that this is why we work hard and that not everything can be given to her easily. I don't have any answers to that, but I know that there are professionals that do, and they have been on this fucking podcast.
And I would like to say, like, almost as a spiritual practice, I am really trying to say no to her because my husband's way better at it. And I know that I would be creating a brat. She's just like constantly, you know, can I have candy? Can I do this? Can I do this? And sometimes it's just so easy to just be like, sure, here.
Yeah, just quiet. Take it.
Trying.
Let's stop this. Right.
Very hard, at least every day, to do it in some way or another to like say no, because we have to. It's so hard.
You mentioned wondering that if you were to have more kids, if there would be a possibility to give birth to the next Greta Thunberg. Looking into the future, when your child is older, do you envision her doing something?
It's funny. The other day I was like, what do you think you'll do when you grow up? She's like, I want to do whatever's the easiest. So probably a scientist. And I was like, okay, that is not
great.
That's not easy.
Not and easy.
You probably have no talent for science. I didn't say this part. But I think that one thing I have done that I am really proud of is I've put her in like outdoor nature schools her whole life. So she is just like very in tune with nature and like always, oh, Mom, did you see this flower? Did you see this rock? She's just always collecting. Yeah. And then they teach it in the school because they're literally like, I drop her off in a park and they're playing with sticks.
That's awesome. That's so awesome. So there's some environmental aspect to her future.
Yes.
There's some nature, outdoorsy, environmental connection. That's great because I'm terrified that my kids are just going to be in the business. Like absolutely fucking horrified. I refuse to sign them up for any cute play, theater, singing. Nope. Like not happening. And when I ask my son what he wants to do, he says, I just want to be an actor and sell pretzels because my husband has a soft pretzel company. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, how am I already not letting him, like, believe, just imagine bigger than what we're showing him? It's a nightmare.
I want some soft pretzels.
Oh, yes. Shappy pretzel. Anytime you want. They're delicious. My husband started the business during the pandemic. It's weird. We do pretzels for everything. It's my whole life. It's pretzels
maybe
all day.
Instead of the cotton candy machine for her birthday, we'll get some Shappies.
We do birthday parties. We do bat mitzvahs. We do it all. Since we have this big 5-year-old milestone birthday coming up, is there any advice that you'd like to give your 5-year-old daughter?
Advice or like reprimand?
Either one.
Just to breathe and it will all happen, because I think that she's like us. She's just really has a hard time focusing on things. And also, trust me, Barbie is bad and crap. If I really want her to do something, like if I have a podcast and I'm like, okay, fine, you can watch Barbie. But like usually I'm trying to have her not watch that.
Oh God. God, I had so many Barbies growing up though.
I know, but it is so dumb. They're like always on vacation.
Oh, it's awful. It's awful.
So focused awful on like their looks.
Barbie is bad. Barbie is bad. That's what we're saying. I haven't gotten there yet because my daughter's 2 and she's right now just obsessed with babies, which I'm just like, what the fuck? My son like truly never. And I don't think I played like that either, but she couldn't. She's one of these little girls that can hold 5 plastic babies at one time and everything is like,
aww.
Oh, feed the baby, baby, baby. And I'm like, is this okay? Like, you have to run the world. Like, you have to be Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Like, we can't be focusing on babies, but it's okay. I'm leaning in. I want her to be happy. Right now, she loves them babies. Okay. Oh, lastly, I wrote this. Gangnam Style is also my fucking son's favorite song. He's like, I'm only listening to Gangnam Style, Pokemon, whatever.
Dude, I would never have shown her that song.
So some of your friends showed her Gangnam Style and it's been that since then?
Yeah, I'm trying to get her off of that. Literally any electronic, she comes up to it and she's like, Alexa, play Gangnam Style. I'm like, that is a heater. Like, she's just obsessed. And because she also knows how obsessed. And I said, listen, you can talk to Alexa, but that song is off limits. She's listening to me now.
finish this sentence. Parenthood is...
degrading.
One we've never had.
I mean, it's other things too, but it is degrading.
Of course it is, but it's whatever the first thing that comes to mind. We get it. We know. It's also beautiful and challenging and rewarding and a roller coaster. It's also degrading.
I remember being in Paris. I took my kid to Paris. I was just like on my knees, like wiping, like on this beautiful street, just like wiping her mouth. And I was like, what is this feeling? Like in the back of my stretch jeans, I was like, what is this ball? And it was like my underwear from like the night before. Because I had run out of the house because we were running late. I used to walk down the streets of Paris and try to make eye contact with some cute boys or something. And now I'm just like, it's so there is that degrading element.
Will we ever get it back, Natasha?
No.
I think you're such a star and you're such an inspiration and you're a fucking great mom.
Thank you. You're a great mom.
Thank you. Know that.
And maybe we'll never get back to our pre-motherhood personalities, but maybe there's a way to integrate. And also, it is really special to have these like beautiful families and all these new experiences and seeing things through your child's eyes. It's cool. It's like you have this new like travel companion and even food. I'll give her like strong cheese and she's like, this is blowing my mind.
No way. She has such a palate. Look at her.
That's what I mean. It's like you get all this instead.
Yeah. Like, for example, it might be the biggest pain in the ass that your husband's going to buy a cotton candy machine, but there's a real chance that you're going to get to experience snow for the first time through her eyes because you chose to fight this fight to have a baby.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, yeah. Is the romance and everything morphed into something a little more
dead, yeah,
annoying.
But fine.
But you know what? Maybe the husband will die in a decade and you'll get your chance at a second act romance.
Yeah, and they might be like really young. I don't know. This is all so insane. I'm so happy you came on Katie's Crib. Everybody who's listening, go download on your Kindle, go to a bookstore, whatever you do. Natasha Leggero's The World Deserves My Children. She looks so fucking fierce on the cover in this gorgeous red dress. Your hair is fire. And there's literally a picture of the world exploding through her kitchen sink window.
Oh, you know what's so funny? I did this photo shoot during the pandemic and my nanny was like extremely obsessed with not getting COVID. And this photo shoot sent her over the roof and she quit. On this day.
You know what? So. Worth it. That shot, you look absolutely gorgeous. And it was worth it because you got that amazing, astounding book cover out of it. The book is a laugh riot. I think it's...
Thank you for reading it. That's so nice that you actually read it and enjoyed it.
Oh, I said before you came on it, you know, I read a lot of books for the podcast, which is great. And a lot of them are Emily Oster and books about facts and all of that, which just make me feel like I'm failing all the time. But... your book was such a joy.
Thank you.
You're a great mom and you're admittedly like the rest of us, which is what the fuck are we doing and where did my life go?
Thank you. And you know what? I'll get on some Zoloft. Maybe that would help.
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode. I want to hear from you. Let's chat. Questions, comments, concerns? Let me know. You can always find me at katiescrib@shondaland.com. Katie's Crib is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from Shondaland Audio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. This season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.